It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Mel, the Drag Queen Story Hour will be coming to the Downtown Mobile Library. A drag queen trained by a local elementary school teacher will be reading to kids aged 3 to 8. There will also be arts and crafts. The LGBT group Rainbow Mobile says it's important for children to see people who are different than they are. This type of event has been held elsewhere. The books to be read include standard kids' fare, as well as one book about a girl with two dads. The library says it's not sponsoring the event and no tax dollars are being used. The outside groups often hold events at Mobile libraries. And while the idea has been heavily criticized on our Facebook page, those we talked to downtown today said they had no problem with it.
I think it would be completely acceptable as long as they're not, you know, harming anyone and they're good with the kids.
They're not any different than we are. They're people.
I don't think it has any merit on whether or not they're going to be a good or bad teacher for children.
We're all the same in God's eyes.
Sandy Rios with you. That was, again, WKRG in Mobile, Alabama. And I find myself wondering, really? All the people that they polled on the streets of Mobile, Alabama don't have problems with a drag queen reading stories to 3 to 8-year-olds. All right, Sandy Rios with you. And to expand on that report, it's the Rainbow Mobile going around the country, at least in that part of the country, teaching LGBT themes like inclusiveness and diversity. And this is from Brian Foonmeyer, who's the executive director of Rainbow Mobile. I think personally, if children get to see that, then it will help a lot with bullying when they get older. And they see people who are different than them, who have two moms or two dads, who act differently, things like that. I think it will help with bullying a lot and for acceptance and promote diversity. One drag queen will read two books, Stella Brings the Family, and then Rainbow Fish. Afterwards, kids can participate in arts and crafts. So that's what was happening in Mobile, Alabama. And perhaps you've heard about this happening all over the country. And, of course, what it brings to mind for me is the godlessness of our culture and the all-out assault on our children. And while they are being assaulted with all of this sexuality and other things from the left, all of the lies that are told about climate change, about human sexuality. I think maybe human sexuality is the most shocking. Just planting the seed to 3-year-olds that they can actually choose their gender, or maybe they aren't who they think they are. I mean, it in any other day and time, it will be shocking and appalling. But we live in a different time, and our schools and libraries are awash and intentional upon propagandizing and ruining our children, taking away their innocence. And that reminds me of another area. At this time of the year, we used to, in public schools, celebrate Christmas. We would have parties. We would, you know, we would sing Away in the Manger as kids. We would, we didn't force anyone to worship, but we did sing Christmas carols. And we did talk about the Christmas story because it's part of history. It's a biblical account. And of certainly our nation's foundings were based on the story of Jesus. Our calendar, for heaven's sake, is based on the date of his birth. But in public school, in fact, I would say probably in many public libraries, the message of Christ is completely obliterated. And that is why AFA is continuing to make our Christmas wristbands available. Because even if you don't say a word, when you wear that Christmas band that says, "Keep Christ in Christmas," you are acknowledging that there is something more to this holiday. You're planting a seed. You are spreading the word, however simple it might be, that Jesus is the reason for the season, even though you don't say it that way. It's keep Christ in Christmas. It starts conversations. It's just a great tool for this time of year. And I want to remind you again that you can get them by calling 877-927-4917. That's 877-927-4917. Or go to the AFA store. Go to afastore.net and order them and give them away. Wear them. Use them for your family. Use them for your Sunday school, your Bible study group, whatever you're doing. But it really is a great antidote to the absence of the message, the heart of the message of Christmas, so crucial to everything that we know and understand. Simple story of a child born in a manger, but crucial to everything, which used to be fun for children. Lots of fun. It was a wonderful, joyous time. Now it is absent of any meaning. Our children are under assault. There's no question about it. It's the drag queen story hour coming to Mobile, Alabama that you just heard about. And you heard that they are reading now these stories from children aged 3 to 8. There used to be a time when we understood, now I'll just speak to this particular class of people, pedophiles always used to groom children. Like before they would molest children, they would groom them by having them see and read things that would be way beyond their years, but would be shocking. And it would soften their target. That's what they do. So now when they use the word grooming, it certainly is what I think about, which takes us to this next story. In Lafayette, Louisiana, I notice so many of these stories are taking place in the South because the South is the hardest to crack. Why? Because the South actually still, for the most part, culturally embraces the story of Jesus. And that's the group, that's the part of the country that must be flipped. And so that's why I think they're concentrating on the South. This taking place in Lafayette, Louisiana. A drag queen story hour was announced to Louisiana preschoolers. And Dylan Pontiff, who is a gay man who goes by the name of, what does he call himself? He has a drag queen name for himself. He was the one that was, it was Santana Pilar Andrews. Santana Pilar Andrews, when he dresses in drag. And he was going to read to the kids, and people got upset about it. And so there was a town meeting about it, and Dylan made his case. Notice what he says. Listen carefully about grooming children. Here it is.
Hi, my name is Dylan Pontiff. I'm actually going to be one of the drag queens reading for Drag Queen Storytime. Apparently to a lot of people in this room, I'm the big boogeyman. And as you can see, I'm probably the most unintimidating person you've ever seen in your entire life. I decided to do this event whenever it was introduced because I have nieces and nephews that I love very much, and I am a person that has been through a lot in their lives. I've been bullied most of my life for being a gay male, being not necessarily what the typical man is. And I thought that this event could be something that shows people and shows children, especially at that age, that understanding that people are different than you doesn't necessarily make them unnormal or makes them not good. And I am not there to push any kind of agenda. I was told at the library council meeting last night that I'm pushing the trans agenda. I'm pushing an overly sexualized agenda, and that is furthest from the truth. The eyes that people give you whenever they think that you are the one that's in support of this event is truly disgusting. And I am not here to obviously change anyone's views about me. But I'm here to let you know that this event is something that's going to be very beautiful. And for the children and the people that support it are going to realize that this is going to be the grooming of the next generation. We are trying to groom the next generation to not see the way that they just did. And just because I said that, you heard the little plore of people behind me. It's disgusting. We are trying to teach people to be tolerable, to be patient, to be loving. And the fact of the matter is that I'm standing right here and there's probably 50 people behind me looking at me with daggers, wishing that I would probably die in a car wreck whenever I leave here. It's truly implorable. And that is what we're trying to do with Drag Queen Storytime. We're trying to raise people to be loving and caring individuals. And I really hope that this event is going to do that for not only just the children at this event, but children in the future. Thank you.
You see how clever it all is. You see, Dylan is the victim here. The people in that council meeting were giving him bad looks and according to him, wish he were dead in a car wreck because what's he doing? He's going to be reading to little children in drag, abusing their innocence, confusing them about how God has made them into thinking that they can be something that they are not. It is a complete delusion. And Dylan is deluded. This used to be referred to as a mental illness. So did gay and lesbianism, too. But we don't dare say that. And it was the homosexual activists who took that classification out of the psychology rules for who was classified as mentally ill. But now it's mainstream. It's all just fine, but it's not just fine. It is a delusion. It's a deadly delusion. For those that want to be a different gender, you've heard Walt Heyer, who was a transgender, is a transgender, well, was. He went through the complete operation to become a female and then went through complete reversal to revert back to a man and then has been married for the last 20 years. And he talks about the suicide rate among children who are messed up in this gender identity thing. It's 50%. And it's just as high for adults. We are preaching death. And yet he says to us, he says, I'm not here to push any kind of agenda. Really? Are you kidding me? He says it's going to be very beautiful. And then he said it'll be the grooming of the next generation. The grooming. Did you hear what I said? The grooming of the next generation. They are so innocent. And these drag queens don't care anything about these little children, and neither do the LGBT activists who come into the classroom. Children should not be discussing these things. I don't care what side of the aisle their parents sit on. Little children should be not thinking about these kinds of sexual things, and yet that's what's taking over public schools and libraries. By the way, back to Dylan, he performs for adult audiences using what he described as material he compared to an R-rated film. But he told the council that he should also be able to have access to preschool children because he knows how to filter himself. And, of course, this is happening all over the country. In fact, John Ritchie, who's the director of TFP Student Action, told LifeSite News, unfortunately, Drag Queen Story Hour program is turning public libraries into platforms to advance the transgender revolution, places where pro-homosexual activists are given access to children as young as three. And here's what really is egregious to me. There's another story coming out of Minnesota. And there's a picture in this particular intellectual takeout of drag queens in drag with, they're not just in drag, they're wearing sexy costumes. They're very big bosomed. They're low cut. They emphasize, you know what they emphasize. They're not just women. They are dressed as, streetwalkers would be kind. I just don't even know. It's like a comedy. It's like a caricature of a woman. You know, I remember when they used to have trouble with Barbie dolls. They still do have trouble with the traditional Barbie dolls because of their shape. Well, these women are dressed like Barbie dolls. Somehow that's okay now, you see, for our three-year-olds. But it's the St. Paul Public Library in Minnesota, and they've introduced their series, this is in the summer, called Drag Story Hours, as part of its We Belong Together initiative. St. Paul Public Library officials announced one time in the summer that they would be offering a series on cross-dressing, Drag Story Hours. It's open to children and adults. Drag pushes people to break boundaries and explore creativity, said Chad Campy, a Minnesota activist who organizes queer-friendly events and is promoting the series with SPLL. That's the St. Paul Public Library. At a very young age, we are taught to embrace our differences. Drag not only provides an opportunity to embrace who we are, it allows for us to broadcast and share who we are with the world. And it says it'll be live streamed on Facebook. It'll feature storytelling, songs, and two performers who will strut their stuff for an over-the-top story hour. It's part of a series called We Belong Together. It's a sweeping initiative that reordered the district's mission from academic excellence for all students to embrace racial equality. That has happened in Minnesota schools where they once used to concentrate on academics. They now concentrate on things like this. And so it's happening all over the country. And not to be left out, the United States government has been in this business of confusing our children, embracing it. I think the Education Department is still suspect from my point of view. And now the Democrats taking power are excited about a new initiative they're going to codify into law if they have their way. It's called the Equality Act. We'll be discussing it after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio. My daughter stated to me that she was in class and she asked the teacher if she could go to the bathroom. And the teacher said yes. So she was in the bathroom and she was pulling up her pants when one of her classmates came in the bathroom, a little boy. She tried to leave out of the bathroom. The little boy pushed her against the bathroom stall, basically pinned her up against there. She asked him to stop. He wouldn't. He took his fingers and he was penetrating her through her pants. And she asked him to stop and stated several times that it hurt. He refused. Once he was done, she went to class. I asked her if she told anyone about it. She started crying, saying, "No, Mama, I didn't tell nobody, but I didn't ask him to come in the bathroom with me. I didn't know he was gonna do that." And I told her that it's not her fault. It was just not her fault. He should not have been in that bathroom.
All right, that's just a short clip of a mother from Georgia. You heard her story. I can't embellish that, nor would I want to. How traumatic, how horrid. And yet that is the situation that has been foisted on America's children under the Obama administration, when the Education Department was forced to allow children, boys who think they're girls, girls who think they're boys, to use bathroom facilities and changing facilities. Well, that's bad, don't you think? That's probably not a good idea, and that's a tragic story. And yet, if Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats have their way, it will become a reality nationwide in many different manifestations. I've asked Emily Chow to join us this morning. She's the director of the DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society, the Heritage Foundation. Emily, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right, so now the piece of legislation, which has kind of been bubbling for a long time, Emily, I've been following the Equality Act for a long time, but it seems to have taken on new life in a little bit different form. And so, first of all, let's just start with what is the Equality Act as it stands right now?
So the Equality Act would amend the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which prevents discrimination on the basis of race and sex and other protected categories. And it would amend that act and add sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes in federal law.
All right. So practically speaking, so someone might say, we just gave that example of bathrooms, and we'll come back to that. But what other things would be impacted? What are we talking about here? What's the scope of this?
Well, I think it's important for people to understand that the Equality Act would basically pathologize disagreement on the fact that we're male and female and that males and females are made for each other and that marriage is between a man and a woman. So the concrete examples are like the bathroom, this tragic situation that happened to this little girl in Decatur, Georgia, being sexually violated because of a transgender bathroom policy. The Equality Act would make that bathroom policy a nationwide policy. It wouldn't just affect bathrooms. It would affect locker rooms. It would affect homeless shelters. It would affect, it would basically, you know, change our definition of women and girls across the country, and the ones who would lose the most are women and girls. It would also implement a transgender medical treatment throughout the country. So any child who is struggling with gender dysphoria, puberty blockers would become the norm for treating gender dysphoria. A hospital that, you know, provides a mastectomy to a woman suffering from cancer would then also have to provide the same thing to a woman struggling with gender dysphoria who thinks she can become a man. So it would create some very serious consequences for women and girls and people who hold religious beliefs about being made male and female and that marriage is between a man and a woman. The case of Jack Phillips at the Supreme Court is a case of that kind of law at the state level. The Equality Act would elevate that kind of law to the federal level.
You know, Emily, I've heard it described this way, and we're going to get into the politics of this in just a second. I've heard it described this as the biggest anti-thought, anti-speech law we've ever seen. I've heard it described as the ramifications being bigger than anything we've ever seen. That it masquerades as equality. So that, you know, they use the word equality. They always put nice names on these things that are not nice at all. So when we say, let's talk about gender equality, sexual orientation and gender identity being protected classes. How would you describe our situation now? You gave a list of people that are protected classes, but how does that actually work now? Without sexual orientation or gender identity, give us an example of how that can be good that they're protected, other classes.
Well, the origins of the civil rights law are from the need that was created under Jim Crow laws for African Americans to have federal level protections because there were state level laws that did allow racial discrimination. And it was widespread racial discrimination that was supported by law, supported by government authorities, and supported by market forces. So the Civil Rights Act was passed to ensure that African Americans would have access to essential goods and services, a place to sleep, a motel room, a place to eat in a restaurant, that they couldn't be turned away simply because of their race, who they are, their identity. The problem with adding these new categories to the Civil Rights Act is that they aren't arising out of the same history and the same facts. There is no evidence of widespread systematic material discrimination against LGBT people like there was against African Americans that led to the civil rights movement. And also, philosophically, these categories are different. Race is an immutable characteristic, whereas sexual orientation and gender identity, it is at least in part defined by a person's conduct. And
yeah,
while
no...
it's legitimate, yeah, it's, I mean, people have legitimate disagreements on what marriage is, and the Equality Act would make it punishable to disagree on marriage. That's what we saw with Jack Phillips in Masterpiece Cake Shop.
You know, I think, here's the thing, Emily, the radical LGBT movement was very, very smart, as they have since I've been dealing with them. Very smart. And so they used this whole racial issue that is a hot button, and rightfully so, in the black community and the history of grievance, and applied the same language of the word of use, discrimination, and sort of likening the treatment of gay and LGBT persons to that of black Americans. And it has been very, very effective. And so that's what I see happening on this next frontier, where they're using that same argument wait a second, you know, what you just described and reminded us of was that black people, black Americans were very poorly treated in the 50s and 60s and early 70s. And the civil rights laws, even the playing field, made things right for them. So why make the case again? Why isn't this the same? Why wouldn't transgender people and gay people and other people who think they are a gender that they maybe their biology doesn't comport to that, why don't they need equal rights before the law?
Well, they do need equal rights before the law, and they do have equal rights before the law. They have the same constitutional freedoms that the rest of us have. I think that it's important for people to understand that civil rights laws are, they were exceptional laws created to remedy an exceptionally deep problem that couldn't be remedied through cultural and market forces. Because, again, the Jim Crow laws were laws that were passed by the states, and there were no market forces working on behalf of African Americans. All the market forces and cultural forces supported discrimination against them. But that's entirely different with people who are LGBT because, again, philosophically, these are totally different categories. Race is an immutable characteristic, and a person's sexual orientation or their gender identity is based in part on their conduct or on their subjective belief about themselves.
And so that's very, yes, absolutely. Yes, underscore. I mean, honestly, that bears repeating again, Emily. We have said it before, but it has to be said again, that being black or brown or white or whatever color you happen to be is an immutable characteristic that is morally neutral. It has nothing to do with your worth or your lack of it or your having it. But the sexual choices we make or the ways we act out sexually, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual or transgender or whatever, is something that we actually have control over. You know, even heterosexuals can be celibate if they so choose. So the way you act out sexually is not an immutable characteristic. That's why the two just do not compare. But it has to be repeated again and again because it's we don't have a very deep thinking culture. I don't need to tell you, Emily, because you're in the business of thinking at Heritage. It's hard to make this case to a culture that's not been taught to think. And that reminds me of the next thing I want to ask you, because I don't want to assume here, but I'm kind of assuming that you're not, you don't have to tell me your age, but I have a feeling you might be not terribly old. Is that correct? How does terribly old mean? I better put a number on it, right? Under 50. You're under 50.
I am under 50, but I'm not a millennial.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay. Well, so that tells me a lot, you know, in terms of your time and space in our culture. So I don't need to tell you that the young people coming through our public schools are muddy thinkers on this. They've been propagandized. And so they're going to think this is great. Do you have an argument for millennials or post-millennials that is a strong, persuasive one that where they could actually break through their brainwashing to think this thing through?
I think in addition to the philosophical argument that, you know, race is an immutable characteristic and sexual orientation, gender identity or not, there is also the historical argument about Jim Crow being legalized discrimination, whereas we don't see discrimination against LGBT people today in any widespread form because all the market and cultural forces are extremely pro-LGBT. We see, you know, the Human Rights Campaign has Fortune 500 companies. Almost all of them are signed up for the Human Rights Campaign lobbying efforts. But I think the third reason is, you know, legally, we ought to be able to live according to our deeply held beliefs. And that's actually the argument that the LGBT lobby has been making for many years, is that they want to live according to who they believe they are. And the same should be true for all other Americans. We should be able to live according to who we are and what we believe. And the Equality Act would threaten the First Amendment. It would threaten our ability to freely speak our mind, to freely think what we believe, and to freely act in the public sphere. So an example of that is the preferred pronouns that would become part of our public, become a mandatory part of our discourse, is to address a transgender person by the pronoun that they think they should be addressed by according to their subjective belief about themselves. And that is going to override the ability of other Americans to speak according to what they believe, which may be rooted in the biological differences between male and female. So this is a law that would seriously restrict our constitutional freedoms for all Americans to live with integrity.
Yes, in fact, Emily, let's come back to the act itself, because my understanding is that it would force people, maybe even in their homes, to use the pronouns that have been the radical weird pronouns that some of us are just not used to and don't plan or care to use, the cisgender and all the different kinds of genders, force those pronouns on public discourse so that people would have to, you know, possibly use those in works, in business, refer to the people the way they want to be addressed, names also, and if not, fear of being fined, actually punished. I think of that law in Massachusetts that just passed in 2018, the law that fines people who report people in the restroom that they don't think should be in that bathroom for whatever reason, that they can now be fined for reporting that. That's the kind of thing that would come out of the Equality Act, I think. Oh, by the way, we have to take a break. Emily Gao is our guest, and she is the director of the DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society. They've been tracking all of these things in the LGBT movement, pieces of legislation. When we return, we want to talk more about the Equality Act itself, but where is this and who's pushing this? And what are the chances of it passing? This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Now, as a result of this year-long study, I'm announcing today that we're ending the ban on transgender Americans in the United States military. Effective immediately, transgender Americans may serve openly, and they can no longer be discharged or otherwise separated from the military just for being transgender. Additionally, I have directed that the gender identity of an otherwise qualified individual will not bar them from military service or from any accession program. In taking these steps, we're eliminating policies that can result in transgender members being treated differently from their peers based solely upon their gender identity rather than upon their ability to serve. And we're confirming that going forward, we will apply the same general principles, standards, and procedures to transgender service members as we do to all service members. What I heard from the transgender service members I met with overwhelmingly was that they don't want special treatment. They want to be held to the same standards and be treated like everybody else.
That was the Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter, under Barack Obama, President Barack Obama. And the military has always been the social engineering, you know, petri dish for all the things that the left want to do. And so that was an announcement made just before Barack Obama left office. In the ensuing weeks and months after that, we realized that transgenders were allowed time for their surgeries, that the military, our tax dollars, initially were going to pay for their surgeries, for their hormone treatments, and that they would have time off to sort of transition and they were not treated like regular soldiers at all. It was special treatment and was going to be very costly. And so now, after President Donald Trump was elected, that policy has been reversed. But take it to the bank that that's what the Equality Act, which is now being championed by Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, Tim Kaine, and others, is going to be high on their list of priorities, and that is to add sexual orientation and gender identity to the 1964 Civil Rights Act. My guest is Emily Gao, and she is, again, with Heritage Foundation. Emily, let's talk a little bit more about what other things you can expect to take place. Let's talk about, like, in the workplace. In other words, that was the military, but if the Equality Act is passed, that would be everywhere, no matter what position, businesses, private businesses, you fill in the blank, schools, everyone would be forced to hire transgender or gender-identified persons with identity different than their biology to perform really any function, correct?
That's correct. It would create a tremendous amount of social tension and litigation to pass this law because it would empower bureaucrats and judges across the country to punish people like Jack Phillips, who have a religious belief or just a moral belief about what marriage is or that we're male and female, which is rooted in biology, science, and medicine. So all those things you talked about, they would happen. So employers would be forced to adopt a preferred pronoun policy. They'd be forced to provide hormonal and surgical transition procedures on their health care plans for their employees. I mean, these treatments are so controversial right now. It's still not clear that these are the proper treatments for people suffering from gender dysphoria. In fact, many doctors would say that this is bad medicine to treat someone with gender dysphoria with hormones and with steroids and with surgeries that would permanently alter their bodies. And so if this act passed, then employers would be responsible for paying all of that, even if it violated their moral or religious beliefs.
I think even there's a question about whether this would be forced upon churches. And in the current climate, you know, Emily, it's not hard to imagine that the First Amendment would be roiled over by the views of the left who don't allow, just do not allow any dissension. And that brings me to what I mentioned before the break, and that was that fine, the punishment set up in Massachusetts, which, of course, is on the cutting edge of all these things, LGBT, the fine and punishment that has been passed to the general public in November of this year to charge people money, monetary fines, if they report someone in the bathroom. I mean, that would be, I would say, would there be not be some punishment tied to this, some tangible punishment if you don't comply with the proper pronouns or providing, you know, breast removal to all people that want their breasts removed? The possibilities are endless.
Well, as we know, the litigation that has arisen from the state laws that put sexual orientation and gender identity into civil rights protections, they have created a huge amount of very costly litigation for people like Jack Phillips, who took his case all the way to Supreme Court. Now we see adoption agencies being threatened with being shut down because they place children with mothers and fathers who are married, or someone, which is about a belief that, you know, a child should have a mom and a dad. It's not anti-gay. It doesn't disqualify anybody who's gay from adopting. But we're seeing that states are using these laws to punish these agencies when there are over 400,000 kids waiting for foster families and over 100,000 waiting for adoption. So these laws will be used as a sword to punish people. They won't be used as shields to actually protect people, because fortunately, we don't see any widespread anti-gay discrimination in this country. And all the market and social forces right now are working against any remaining anti-gay bigotry. And anti-gay bigotry does exist, but, you know, believing that a child deserves a mother and a father, or believing that marriage is between a man and a woman, is not anti-gay, but that's what people are being punished for.
Well, I would also interject that religious conviction is not bigotry. You know, morality is not bigotry. And so we have to say that. And so people who have moral values, biblical moral values, are being punished for that. And that's just wrong. It's not, it is completely out of consort with the foundings of this nation, with the First Amendment and our right to express our religious views. I also would add to this, Emily, as you, I'm sure, well know, that the effect on children and adult transgenders is horrific. The effects of these surgeries, the after effects, there's a very high suicide attempt rate among transgender persons. And then among children who are in who have transgender identity, there's a high suicide rate. We are not helping people when we empower and embolden and encourage them to cut off their biological parts and take hormones. Also, the other thing I just want to add is that we know in public school, the basis upon which they are identifying these children who think they're decide or fancy they're another sex, there's nothing scientific. There's no measure in this. It's the only measure is if a boy says, you know, I think maybe I feel like a girl. That's the measure upon which they start giving out hormones and encouraging them to mutilate their bodies. So this is horrific. Honestly, it's horrific. But I want to, the Equality Act then would apply much, it would apply to everyone everywhere. I think we could just say that. And it would force us to do and accept things that we would not, we just cannot tolerate. So who's behind this? I know Nancy Pelosi is now touting this. Do I understand that correctly?
That's right. She said that it would be one of her top priorities as Speaker to introduce the Equality Act.
All right. Well, if she passes it in the House, she can't pass that in the Senate. That's the one thing I don't think. I mean, do you have a read on that? Are you guys tracking this, the strength of this, of the popularity of this bill in both houses?
Well, we are. We don't think that it has a chance to pass in the Senate, but it's really important for all members of Congress, Republican or Democrat, to understand the tremendous harm that this kind of legislation would do, and to see clearly the impact it would have on women and girls to have a nationwide bathroom bill that would allow biological men into restrooms and locker rooms and showers. It's important for all legislators who care about women and girls to see that that is what would happen. And as you mentioned, the transgender medical treatments, and especially the medical treatments that would be applied to children with gender dysphoria. This isn't simply a partisan issue. I hope that people on both sides of the aisle can see that this would create tremendous harms to real people, as well as leading to violations of the Constitution.
Do you have any idea, do we have any idea where President Trump stands on this?
Well, we hope the president will see the harms that are caused by the Equality Act, and that he will not give any support to it, and also stand opposed to it, because it very clearly harms a wide variety of Americans. It would also really create a damper on business, which is something that he cares about a lot. It create more bureaucracy, and it would create more litigation for small businesses and large businesses that have, a belief on marriage, like Jack Phillips did, or, you know, businesses that have moral or religious convictions that, you know, would be violated if they had to pay for hormone treatments or if they had to pay for sex change surgeries. So it's a very anti-business bill as well.
You know, Emily, let's drill down on that a second, because I actually, and look, I'm a Christian, and I fervently believe in that the maker of all things knew exactly what was best. He designed us with a specific purpose, and I think that we've just gone mad in the area of sexuality in this country. So I'm not ashamed of that. But I would have to say that I think this goes beyond religious concerns. I know that you're not saying that, but I just want to emphasize this, because I don't think that many people, and that includes men, want to share their bathrooms or their dressing rooms with people of the other gender. A lot of men, I believe it's a very good argument to talk about women and children, because women seem to, for whatever reason, have higher favor in our culture. By the way, that's a discussion for another day. But it affects all. I don't think men want to go to the bathroom with women in the bathroom. I don't think they do. And so what we're saying is, if the way this would affect business is, businesses would have to accommodate people. You can go to any bathroom you want. No discrimination. You know, actually, I was just remembering, Emily, I was at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco a couple of years ago, and we were having lunch in a beautiful place, but we were outside, and I needed to go to the restroom, so I picked on a bathroom on the wharf, and there was a long line of men and women going into this little tiny bathroom. And it was the strangest thing. A little girl with her mother went in, and there were men in line with us just right there. I mean, it wasn't a big bathroom. We were really close. I hated it. Honestly, I hated it. And that's our future. That just not just the bathrooms, it's changing rooms. That is our future if the left has their way. And I honestly don't think that's just a religious consideration. I think that's part of natural modesty. I'm not sure you ever get past that. But when you say litigation in businesses, what kind of litigation are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the kind of litigation that happens to Jack Phillips. If this bill passed, you know, every business that's considered to be a public accommodation would have to provide services that affirm same-sex marriage. It would have to provide services that affirm fluid gender identity. It would have to have the bathroom bills. Any gym would have to allow locker rooms to be used by people of the opposite sex, and completely erase gender distinctions that are very healthy and normal, and protect modesty, as you said, which you're absolutely right, that there are men and boys who oppose that as well. So it would create a tremendous amount of litigation. It would, again, empower bureaucrats and judges to punish businesses that don't go along with this radical progressive ideology. It would impose the preferred pronoun policies in workplaces all over the country. And again, there are feminists, radical feminists, who oppose the use of preferred pronouns because they, you know, they realize that a man and a woman are not the same, and they want to be able to maintain that distinction in their speech as well as in their mind.
All right, well, it's a new world, kind of an Orwellian world, but we have not lost, we've not lost this yet, Emily. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to invite you on the show, because we're going to fight back on this one big time. We've allowed the radical LGBT movement to gain way too much, and we have to stop this, and we can do that. And as this thing develops, of course, we'll bring you more information so that you know exactly how to put your foot down and say, no, this is a bridge too far. Emily, and by the way, Heritage is doing a great job right there in D.C., being the think tank, providing all things research in order to make the case to Congress people and to the president. And we're very grateful for them. Emily Gao, thank you so much for joining me today. We appreciate your time. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.